Welcome to the Archippus Podcast.
As members of Archippus, we want to encourage followers of Jesus to pursue the work God has called them to do.
Jesus calls us to follow him, and in our call to follow, we receive a call to work.
And we want every follower of Christ to recognize that they have already received a call to do good work for the kingdom of God.
Our first episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Mason Powell. Hi, Mason.
Hey, everyone. Hey, Alex.
And if for some reason you're just joining in on our second episode, not our first, my name's Alexander Hildebrand. Mason and I are both pastors. I'm a pastor at a church here in Pennsylvania, and he is all the way over in Missouri. So we've been pastoring for a while now. Like, we're still young. We're not super young, but we've been doing it for a little bit.
Speak enough for yourself. To think I'm we still know
enough. So yeah, this project is a project that the two of us have come together to put on to just encourage followers of Jesus to take up the work that God's called them to. You know, it's our hope that we would encourage people to really think about how God's giving them a job. He's giving them a mission. That mission is unique to every single different person. And that as Christ followers, we should wake up prepared to do good work on behalf of the kingdom of God. And so we're going to really just kind of continue to discuss, you know, the biblical concept of work. So now, Mason, if we were going to talk about work, where do you think would be a great starting place to form this biblical concept of work?
Yeah, there is no better place to start than right at the beginning when God made Adam and Eve, and then he sent them in the garden, and he's like, go and multiply and do good things and be good stewards of my creation. I've made you in my image. And of course, this is the Mason paraphrase, but I think that's the best place to really start with all this.
Yeah, I love Genesis 1 and 2. Like, I'm pretty sure every single time I preach, I come back and reference either Genesis 1, 2, or 3. It's every sermon. I even point it out to people too. Like, I tell people, like if you listen to me, you are going to hear a reference to one of those three chapters in like every sermon. Just because the way that the Bible works, like, those three chapters are so foundational to pretty much every single topic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, in fact, I used it this past Sunday when I was preaching, and I was preaching about a message on sex related to Ephesians chapter 5, and I referenced the, hey, we've been made in the image of God, and I brought up some negative examples that the ways we've taken sex and just distorted it and hurt one another. And I was like, the basis of this is that we are not respecting the fact that another person is made in the image of God. Like, so I'm in the same boat with you. Like, everything kind of goes back to Genesis 1, 2, and 3. And it's everything from that moment on is about trying to get us back to Genesis 1, 2, and 3. And everything happening in Genesis 1, 2, and 3 is played out so many times throughout the Bible. It's kind of like one of those, if you want to fully understand what it means to be a disciple, to understand what the Bible is saying, like, you got to kind of understand Genesis 1, 2, and 3. Because that, and like the only other story I can think of that has overlays as much as Genesis 1, 2, and 3 would be like the Exodus story when God brings Israel out of Egypt. And it's like that story is all over the place as well.
Yeah, so I think a good way to maybe frame the discussion for today, and this actually wasn't a part of our notes, but I'm going to call an audible here and frame our discussion this way. I think a perfect way would be to spend time looking at Genesis 1, spend time looking at Genesis 2, and then spend time looking at Genesis 3, because all three of those chapters talk about this concept of work. So in Genesis chapter 1, you know, we see how God is at work, right? That's like all Genesis 1. God is at work. You know, he's a creative. He's actively working to create the universe. And then when we look at Genesis 2, we kind of zoom in on human beings, and we see how God has called human beings to work. You know, God made human beings to reflect him, to image him, and so they're called to work as well. And then in Genesis 3, we kind of see how work becomes distorted, how it's cursed, and it becomes tainted in a lot of ways. And so I think as we develop this idea, this biblical concept of work, I think starting on the first three pages of the Bible is really key, because it's forming a foundation of how we look at this topic.
I like the fact that you just said that, of saying this is about forming a foundation, because this whole Archippus project is, as you already said beforehand, about answering the question that this God that we worship, that we see in Scripture, has a task for us. He has a purpose or a work for us, whatever terminology you want to use. And so for you who are listening, we've already said this in our last podcast, but if you happen to be joining in on this one, like, our goal with this project, from this podcast to all the future material that we're bringing up, is we want to help encourage you to fulfill the work that God has called you to do. And so this is a great idea of just starting out with a foundation of what was God's original intent behind our calling, our purpose, our work, that we see certainly starting out in Genesis chapter 1.
Yeah, so let's start at Genesis chapter 1, everybody's, you know, favorite memory verse. You know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So I really like to think through the lens of movies. Like, when I try to come up with illustrations for teaching or for sermons, like, my mind immediately goes to one of two places, either movies or music. And so in a movie, the way that a screenwriter, right, is going to write a script, or a director is going to make a movie, is they're essentially constantly giving you information about the characters. So typically, when you first start a movie, the very first scene that a character is in, that scene is going to educate the viewer on what that character is like. And so the Bible works in a very similar way. Like, when you open up to the very beginning, to the first page, the first thing you see about God is going to give you a picture of God. It's going to tell you about God. It's going to tell you what that God is like. And when we open the Bible, the very first thing we see that the biblical authors want us to know about God is that God is a God who creates. He's the creator. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the biblical authors didn't stop there, right? They actually spend an entire page, right? The entire first chapter is all focused in on watching that God create. Just like this fascinating picture. Like, I love the first chapter of Genesis. It's so artistic in how it displays, like, God just speaking the universe into existence. I love it. And I think today, like, when we think about God and we think about, you know, God's power, like, God could have just snapped his fingers and boom, everything's there, everything's going. But the biblical authors depict God's creating through 6 days. Right? And he's creating things kind of one at a time. It's through a specific order and a specific procedure. But I think one of the important aspects of that is that we get to sit and we get to spend time watching this creative God go about the work of making the universe. That it's something that God delights in doing. You know, you get to the end of every day, and what does God say? It was good. Like, can you create this movie in your mind? Can you create the scene of God at work creating the universe? Like, he's working and making the universe, and he gets done with each day, and he sits back and he sees what he's made, and he calls it good, that he's had a good day of work. Like, that's the first picture we get of God. And I think it's really important that we understand that and we recognize that, because that is going to communicate to us who God is, but then it's also going to communicate to us who we should be like.
That's very true. And it's a beautiful imagery right there that you kind of painted of, like, this, here's this God who creates. He's active. He's not lazy. He's productive. And everything he's producing is good. Like, and he says, you see in verse 22, he calls them to the animals and he's like, hey, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to give you the ability to extend life, to produce more life, that they're basically given this task of, hey, I've produced life for you, now go and do life for others. Go and take part in this work. And all of it kind of has, like, this climax reaching humanity. Like, you look at this whole narrative and you see that everything's good and defined in the basis of what it serves humanity and what it gives for humanity. And so here's this God who his work has the, I guess the recipients is the kind of word I'm looking for here. Like, the work is to produce something good for someone else that gives glory back to God.
Yeah. And that creative working nature being replicated is all over the first chapter of Genesis. Like, when you read through Genesis chapter 1, how many times are you going to sit down and see that God makes something that then gets replicated, that it gets reproduced, right? Like you just said, like, God makes the fish, and what did the fish do? They multiply. God makes cows. What do? They multiply. God makes birds. What do? They multiply. God makes trees. And what do? They multiply. Like, everything God is making, he's made it in such a way that they would continue to make more of themselves. And every aspect of creation is also serving a purpose in the universe. Like, I think you just mentioned this earlier, but, you know, light has a purpose. The sun and moon, they have a purpose, right? They let us see. They give us warmth, right? It's crazy to think that if the earth was just like, you know, I can't remember the exact metric, but if like the earth was a foot closer to the sun, like, it would immediately throw everything off. Or if the earth was a foot further away from the sun, it would immediately throw everything off. You know, like, everything is just created in this perfect way to facilitate further creation of life. That's a beautiful picture we get at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. And like I said, I come back to thinking about that. I'm like, man, you know, the amount of detail and the amount of intricate work that God put in to create this stage, this platform, so to speak, for his drama to play out. We're still discovering it. We're still uncovering facts about God's creation and just still continuing to be wowed that there's this God. What, he just speaks this stuff into creation. He just makes this stuff. But I still come back to this awe of, wow, he did this for a purpose. Every little thing has a purpose. Everything little thing serves one another. Every little thing is healthy when they're working in tandem within their purpose for what God intended them to do. And all of it is about serving the rest of the community in some ways, whether that's in a grand cosmic scale or whether that's in a super microscopic scale, that God has designed everything to, he who works has designed everything to work together to give glory back to him.
Yeah, exactly. So in this first page, we have a picture of a God who loves to make, who loves to create, who loves to do good work. We get a picture of creation, how it's designed in such a way that it also should be making and creating and working. And we also see that every aspect of creation is given purpose. Everything fits together perfectly. Everything is made in such a way that it's going to benefit the rest of creation. And we get all of that just from the first page. So let's kind of move on over to page 2 and like zoom in on human beings and see, how does God call them to be good workers in this world that he's just made? Like, what does Genesis 2 have for us in forming this biblical concept of work or creation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it kind of goes back to how chapter 1 ended, where God makes man and woman, and it says that, you know, he created them in his own image, that he who is the great worker, the great creator, then entrusted us with that same calling to go and create, to go and be workers. And we see this narrative kind of take place in chapter 2 in a lot of ways, where we kind of get a zoomed in view of all this, and we get this peeling back of the layers where God's starting to talk about the purpose of humanity. And he tells them, he's like, hey, go and be good stewards of my creation, go and be blessings. You know, he's the only time where he God refers to humanity as something that he made that was very good. He's like, this is something uniquely special. And it has kind of like this priestly language to it. Like God has like made this massive temple. And then he says, he's like, hey, I'm going to make these individuals that are going to have my image, that they're going to represent me. And I'm going to entrust them to take care of this creation. I'm going to entrust them to name the animals, to be good to the land. Basically, he's like, I have blessed you to be a blessing. I'm giving you a purpose. And I think that's super crucial because, like, a lot of times we view work in a very negative mindset. Like, wouldn't you say, Alex, like that sometimes we're like, man, I don't want to go to work or I don't want to do this, right? Like, would you say that in our mindset, we tend to think of the fact that we have to work for a living as a negative aspect?
Yeah, I think that it's easy for us to approach work as something that we have to do. Like, we have to work to survive. And it can be easy to develop this approach to life where we try to work as little as possible and recreate as much as possible. Like, we think, if I can get by with as little work possible, then I can get the most enjoyment of my life. But that's really not a Christian approach to work, because we see a God who loves to make. He loves to spend time creating and doing work. He makes the universe in such a way that the universe is called, you know, to also participate in this work. And then we zoom in to Genesis chapter 2, and we see human beings that God specifically made them to do good work. So if you have your Bibles open as you're listening to us, or you can go grab one, turn to Genesis chapter 2, and I want you to look at this verse. It's verse 15. So Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, and it says, "Then the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to cultivate it and to tend it." So there's a very specific order in that sentence, right? You don't see human beings being made and then the garden being made around human beings. You see that God created a garden and then like picked man up, put man in the garden specifically to work it. Like, God put man in the garden to tend to it and to cultivate it. So like, when we typically think of the Garden of Eden, like when you hear someone say that, like we think of like paradise, we think of perfection, we think of easy going, right? That everything is just this wonderful delight.
I think of trees that have donuts on them that make you skinny.
Right. Right. When we think of the Garden of Eden, we think of this like idyllic world where there's no work. But when you actually look at what the Bible has to say about the garden was designed in such a way, and man was designed in such a way, that when man was put in the garden, the first thing that man's supposed to do is to work the garden, is to tend to it and cultivate it. And so we see that that work was given to man, that human beings, one of their first jobs was to care for the garden. And not just that, we also see that man gets this mission to name the animals, right? That God brings all these creatures before man, and Adam is tasked with naming the creatures. And that's also a part of this mission, this job, to care for the world, to care for the garden. And it goes into this, you know, theology of human beings having dominion over the world, that they're co-rulers with God. But when I engage with, you know, with people, In a very general sense, I don't think people really understand or think about the garden as a place for human beings to work. I think when your average person out there thinks of the Garden of Eden, they think of it as a place to play, like a place without work. But in fact, it's the exact opposite. Thank you.
makes me think of, so when I was younger, my dad and I, we were into trying to build this rat rod. If you're not familiar with that, that's like a hot rod, but for like rednecks and hillbillies and those who are super poor like ourselves, but really cool designs. And I think of it in terms of like that, where my dad was the one who knew all the knowledge and he was out working and he would invite me to come and join him in the process. So like, hey, you know, come and help me put this engine in, help me weld this thing over here. And that's kind of the imagery in verse 15 of chapter 2, where you've so far have seen this God who is at work, and then he's like, hey, you over there, like, I want you to come and join me in what I am doing right now, which has some amazing real-world applications if you think about it. Like, here's this God who has put Adam and Eve into the situation that he's already at work, and he's asked them, will you join me in this work, and will you help cultivate this? Will you help bring a blessing out of this with me? And I think that has some beautiful real-world applications with this whole theme of this project that we're talking about, is that we want to help encourage you who are listening to see that God has a purpose for you. God has called you to do something, and that work is in a broad scope. And I say that because we don't know exactly what it is for each individual. That's something that you've got to figure out. And I say that in terms of understanding that when God calls you to work, it's not in just a pastoral position at a ministry or church. We kind of talked about that in the last podcast, that God has something bigger than that for all of us. While some he calls, like me and Alex, into ministry, others he might call you for the specific family that you're been born in or that you married into to work in that space. And so here's this imagery of this God who's basically saying, I am at work in this at this time, but I would love it if you would come and hold the flashlight for me, or if you would come and hand me the screwdriver, you know, or the blowtorch or something like that. Like, that's the imagery I get in this, where it reminds me, like I said, of growing up and being in the garage late at night holding the flashlight for dad. But I was playing some role. He was doing all the heavy lifting. And I was just grateful that I was called to come out and participate in the work. And I think God has this imagery here in the same sense. He put Adam and Eve in this little garden, not the entire scope of the world. He's just like, here's this little garden. I want you to join in with me. I'm already doing the heavy lifting. I'm the one who's just creating the whole cosmos, but I'm going to invite you to come and join me in the scope right here in this space where I put you in. And I'm going to ask, would you just partner with me? Would you have the heart to cultivate and make something beautiful out of it? And I think that, like I said, has some real world applications, maybe not real world, modern day applications for some of you who are listening, who might be like, man, I know what God has called me to do, and it has to do with my family, or it has to do with how I spend my time, or it has to do with some other aspect of my life. And I'm recognizing that God is at work, and he wants me to step into this and do something in this space. Understand that God has already done the heavy lifting. God is doing the heavy lifting. He's just asking, will you participate in it? Will you join in with bringing a blessing to bear? As he called Adam and Eve in chapter 2 of Genesis. It's this beautiful imagery of this relationship of what does this relationship with God even look like? Is it, you know, hey, I'm all lazy, I'm just sitting back and relaxing, like that classic imagery of the Garden of Eden that we tend to jump to? Or is it the more biblical understanding of here's this God who is at work making something beautiful, and he is calling us individually, one by one, come join me in what I'm building. Come and join me in this beautiful thing that's being made here. Use what talents and gifts and abilities I've already given you. Come and join in with me in all these things to build something beautiful.
Yeah, I think that is so important to recognize, that God is there the whole time. Like, when you look at Genesis 2, it's not like God leaves. Like, God doesn't assign work to human beings so that he then doesn't have to work. Because we think of that, like, especially if you're in any kind of job where, like, you're a manager or you have a manager, right? We think of, like, delegating tasks. Like, I have that even, you know, in the times where I've had interns, right? Like, I give interns a certain job so that I can then go do something else, right? That I don't have to do that. But God doesn't, like, delegate to human beings so that he can then stop working. God invites human beings to do what he's already done and has been doing. And that's to care and create for the world. Right? That's such a beautiful picture of work. When we're creating, we're thinking about this biblical concept of work, right? We have to recognize that our call to work is joining a God who is already doing it. Like, we're not doing something that God hasn't already done or is doing. We're joining God on his mission. And when you think about your life and you think about the work that God has for you in your life through that lens, like, that changes everything. It gives a real divine purpose to the work that you do, that you're joining God in his mission that he's already doing, that he frankly can do without you, but that he chooses to invite us into that experience. I think if we think about work through that lens, work no longer is something that we want to avoid at all costs, but instead work becomes a grand delight.
I agree with that completely. And that's such a beautiful, beautiful thing that here's this God who, you know, is not saying, hey, I'm leaving this all in your hands. And sometimes we get into that mindset. We start thinking, man, this is all on me. I'm shouldering this all myself. You know, yes, I took this leap of faith. I'm following what God has called me to do. And it's all on me. And some of you, maybe that's why you're listening to this and you're sitting there thinking, I know what God wants from me, but I don't want to do it because I think I will not be able to do it. Or I think I'm going to carry this all on my own. Or I think I'm going to fail God. Like, God is asking you not to go and do something for him. He's asking you to come and join in with something he's already doing. And that's such a huge shift in our mindset of, even when we think, man, I'm doing something for God. In reality, it's not we're doing something for God. It's more of we're doing something with God, that we've come to join in with whatever he's doing. And that's the imagery here. And that's an encouraging message, because sometimes we can feel very alone. And sometimes we can feel like, man, this is all on my shoulders. Or sometimes we can just feel like there's no love here in this. And when we stop to think, God is not abandoned us, and he's not sent us off to do something aimless. He has called us to join in with what amazing work he is doing. There's no loneliness in that respect of this God is with us. As well as we can have the encouragement of knowing, if this God is with us, then therefore we know that this God loves us. Because as the New Testament tells us, you know, God is love, and where God is, there's heaven, and there's so much we can go into this. But here's this imagery of this God who's basically saying, I will never leave you. I'll never forsake you. You are not alone. You are loved, and I'm here with you. And I want you to come and join me in this next journey that I have for you. And there's something beautiful we want to build through this, you know, and we want you to come be part of it. But like, that's this beautiful imagery we're seeing in chapters 1 and 2 of Genesis. But Alex, let me ask you, unless you got more to say about this, let me ask you.
Well, I was going to say, before you ask me whatever you're going to ask me, dude, you found like our preacher statement for the day. If either one of us were gonna like make a sermon, we're trying to come up with like these really nice like key lines that are easy to remember, and you came up with it for today. You know, that idea of like God's not asking to do something for him, he's asking us to do something with him. Like, that's such a good, that's like powerful, man. Like, that's going to sit in my brain for, like, I'm going to go, the next time I'm teaching a lesson, like, I'm just going to verbatim say that.
You're just
like,
going to plagiarize me.
Yeah, I am going to plagiarize you. But we're friends, so it's okay. But, like, just like, if anybody takes anything from this conversation today, like, that's my hope, is this idea that when we look at work in the Bible, God isn't asking us to do something for him. He's asking us to do something with him. And I mean, really, like, what do we have to offer the God who can create entire universes? Mm. Nothing. Instead, God gives us work as a joy, to give us a mission, to give us a purpose. Like, it's an invitation. And if you think about your daily life of work through that lens, like, it changes everything. So, all right. Ask me the question you're going to ask.
I was just going to ask you, like, hey, you know, turning now to chapter three, what do we kind of see of this narrative of work?
Well, exactly. So chapter three is what leads us to have the picture of work that we so often easily get. Because when we look at chapter three, we see the fall of human beings. We see, you know, man and woman rebel against God. Instead of trusting him, they turn against him and they take their lives into their own hands. You know, they take from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and it throws everything out of whack. Like, chapter three, page three, is where sin enters into the picture, where now instead of there's this loving relationship between God and human beings where everything's close and united and working together, now human beings have separated themselves from God. Like, because remember, look at chapter three, after Adam and Eve take from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, what is their first instinct? It's to hide from God. It's to even hide from each other, right? So their sin drives a wedge between human beings and God. Their sin drives a wedge between each other. They're trying to cover their nakedness because they feel shame and they want to separate themselves from each other. And that immediately impacts their work, to the point where when you read the curse section of Genesis chapter 3, like, God is essentially telling human beings, like, this is the consequence of how you rebelled against me. Work gets a specific mention when the curse is given to Adam. And let me pull this up here, because I want to read it, like, verbatim, you know, from the text.
Yeah, while you look that up, let me go ahead and say something that's just beautiful that I've been chewing on or reflecting on for a while now, is God's response to that failure. You know, you mentioned the curse, and you mentioned, you know, this broken relationship, and I know you're going to read it here in a minute, but God's first response was right after, you know, Adam and Eve, they start to hide from each other, they run from God, they tried to cover themselves in fig leaves. God's first response was to ask, why did you run from me? Like, where are you going? Like, here's this God who, remember, he's calling us to join in with him. And our response from sin was a fleeing from him. And his response to that, his first response, is just this brokenheartedness. You see this God who wants to be working with us, who wants to be in this relationship with us. And his first response is, man, why did you leave? But because he is good, and because there's justice in him, he's got to deal with this brokenness. And there's going to be some consequences. And you go ahead and read it now, Alex, because I know what you're about to read. Go ahead and read it for us.
Yeah, so this is just the curse section of chapter 3. And I'm going to skip the curse to the serpent. I'm just going to jump straight to human beings. So in verse 16, so Genesis 3, 16, we have God's, you know, speech to Eve, to the woman. It says, to the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you shall deliver children. Yet your desire will be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. And then to Adam, he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. With hard labor you shall eat from it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles shall grow for you, yet you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread until you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. Right? So most of this curse, right, the consequences for human beings' sin, is that the work, the mission that they were given, is now incredibly far more difficult because their relationship with God, right, has been tarnished. Because human beings have removed themselves from the presence of God, they've run from him. And you see that in a very full sense when they get removed from the Garden of Eden, right? Because human beings have separated themselves from God and are fleeing him and turned against him, the work that God has made them to do is incredibly far more difficult. You know, the work of Eve, of bearing children and producing children, that is painful. The work of Adam, having to work the ground to get food, that is now difficult. He's got to sweat for it. Right? The picture of work before in the garden was that it was work, but it wasn't like destructive work. That work didn't come with a cost. But now, the basic work of providing food, the basic work of reproduction, of having children, now that comes with a cost. It comes with pain. It comes with sweat, right? And so now we live in this world where often work is hard. Like, there are plenty of times where work is not fun. It comes with a cost. And that's not the fault of work. That's the fault of when we have this improper relationship with God, that when we've run away from Him, that's the real result of this painful work.
Yeah, there's something in that that kind of speaks to why it is so difficult sometimes to do good, or when you're trying to do good things in this world, why it always feels like, man, I just took one step forward, one step back. You know, I can't seem to move forward in this. I know this is a good cause, but why am I suffering these consequences? Why am I having to deal with these frustrations when all I want to do is good with my life? All I want to do is bring good into this world. And this is kind of speaking to this, is that we live in a world that is broken in its original intent and purpose. And here's this God who's like, unfortunately, this is the state. You were made to be a blessing upon the world. And now to do that, to further life, to bring more goodness into this world in whatever capacity, is going to be a little bit more difficult, because you who are the ones who are supposed to be the stewards are a little bit more difficult to deal with now.
Yeah, well, and I will say this, that the curse narrative, you don't read it correctly if you only see the negatives, because there's plenty of hope.
Oh, yeah.
In the curse section as well. Like, there is, you know, the proto-evangelium with the message to the serpent, but there's also good news about work, right? Because Adam and Eve don't get fired, right, from their jobs. They do get removed from the garden, but like the general mission of working and caring for the earth, having dominion over the earth, right, and reproduction, like they maintain all of that mission and purpose.
Oh yeah, he's like, not when like, we think of, he's not like, hey, I'm taking the image of God from you and I'm removing you of having purpose as created beings or anything. Like, he doesn't do that. Like, he just says,
but like, you know, this is when we think about work today, like I think about, I have a job, right? And if I don't do my job right, like I'm going to get fired. Like, we think of losing our job as the consequence of not doing the job well, not doing it right. But the hope in the curse here is that God never once removes the job from human beings. He tells them it's going to be more difficult because you've essentially made it more difficult. Our relationship is strained here, but he doesn't fire them. Like, he could easily have just wiped human beings off the face of the earth and made other perfect human beings again, but he doesn't. He doesn't. And that's so encouraging for us. Like, in our own failings, when we fail, like when we fail the Archippus verse, right? Be sure to take up the work, to take up the ministry that God has called you to do. When we fail to do that, we can have encouragement and know that God hasn't fired us. Like, even if we fail to do the work that God's called us to do today, we can still wake up tomorrow and seek out to go do it. And it might be more difficult because we failed, but God's still calling and he's still inviting and he's still drawing us to himself. Like, that's the picture of the gospel, that despite our failures, God's still calling us and inviting us and seeking us out and drawing us into his presence. And so I think that's, there's something really important to recognize in that curse, that yeah, things get more difficult because of our sin. Our work can become far more difficult, can become unpleasant. But God still has the job for us. He's still calling us to that mission. And we can turn and seek him and take it up and still find a delight even in the difficulty of it.
I really like that imagery that you just gave me, where it's basically where this God's like, okay, you guys messed up, but I'm not firing you because this work still needs to be done. And this world still needs to be taken care of. It's just going to be a little bit more difficult now, but we're going to get through this. And you kind of see this if you track the rest of the next few chapters of Genesis, where here's humanity. They just kind of
the whole Bible.
Well, yeah, the whole Bible. But like, yes, certainly the whole Bible. But you get this imagery of, especially in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, where here's this God who keeps basically giving out this grace and mercy over and over to humanity. They keep failing. They keep dropping the ball. And sometimes they're very adamant of like, yeah, we're going to turn and rebel against you. You know, like in Genesis chapter 11, where basically they're like, we're going to build a tower to storm the gates of heaven and dethrone God, right? It's this imagery of like, here's this humanity that is just failing and it's losing its purpose, or not losing its purpose in the sense that it's fired, but losing its purpose in the sense that it's forgetting its purpose. It's refusing to be what God has made it to be. And then it brings in this question of, well, is God going to fire us now? Is he just going to give up, you know, when you end chapter 11? But it's not. You get this turning of the page in chapter 12, and you get this imagery of God basically rolling up his sleeves, and he's like, okay, we're going to get back to work. And he calls Abraham, and he's like, I'm going to build something new, and you're going to be a blessing to all the world. And that blessing language goes back to Genesis 1, 2, and 3, where God's like, I made humanity to be a blessing, to do good work, to give glory back to God. And he looks at Abraham and he's like, you know, this is, of course, the Mason paraphrase. He's like, hey, humanity has failed in this. It doesn't mean that they've quit. They're not getting it. But I'm going to build something new. And I'm going to start with you, Abraham. And I'm going to restore this purpose so that all people will one day look at you and say they're blessed because of you. And that your people, your descendants, will be a blessing upon the rest of the world. And you see that in Israel, and then eventually the church picks up this narrative. And like, there's some beautiful imagery of, here's this God who wants to restore the failings that we have. That, yes, God's given us purpose. We dropped the ball. We failed. We weren't fired. But here's this God who steps into our failure. And then he offers us a way out, and he starts to fix things, and he works with us to fix our own failures. That's the big narrative of a lot of the Old Testament. And certainly when we come to Jesus, and a big, one of the focus of Jesus and his ministry is, you know, restoring that. And so you see that. You're so right in that God did not like fire them. He's like, yeah, you messed up, but this is going to be a little bit more difficult, but the work still needs to be done.
Yeah, and I think the same can be said about us today. Like, if you are breathing, like if you are alive, like that is an opportunity for us to turn, to seek God again, and to take up the work that he's called us to do, to take up the mission that he's given us. You can say that in a broad sense of just, you know, the character of your life, like the fruit of the Spirit. But you can also use it in a very specific sense of what specific mission, what specific work is God given you? And maybe you haven't been working at it. Maybe you haven't taken it up. But if you are alive, like if you still have breath in your lungs, and you can know that God hasn't fired you, but he's given you a new day. And in that new day and that new opportunity, we can turn and seek him and receive, you know, the grace and mercy that comes through the person of Jesus. And I think that that's a great way to end today's discussion, just to go back and give some bullet points. You know, when we look at Genesis 1, we see that God is a God who loves to work. He loves to create and make, and he's made every part of this universe with purpose and with mission. When we look at Genesis 2, we see that God has created human beings, and he put human beings in the garden to work it, to cultivate it, and to tend it. He's given human beings a mission. And even when they've sinned and rejected that mission, they've rejected God, God doesn't fire them. He does recognize it's going to be a bit more difficult now. But he still continues to call them to do that work with him. And the same can be said for our lives today. So I think that's all it for today. Mason, it's been a delight to talk to you just about all this. I'm excited to see where our conversations go in the future as we continue to develop this biblical picture of work, how it connects with this Archippus statement in Colossians.
Oh, yeah.
And what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just saying... No, I was just saying, oh, yeah, and I'm excited for this and where we're going. I think we should probably have an episode. It's too late now. This would be too long of an episode, but maybe one of just kind of talking about work in a, I don't want to say post-Christ. That sounds really bad, and that's not biblically true. But a post-resurrection, what does work look like now in a post-resurrection
post-ascension.
Post-ascension. That's a good word. Post-ascension.
What does work look like now?
Yeah, because we kind of looked at just Genesis 1, 2, and 3, and I think it'd be a good conversation to say, okay, if Jesus has kind of restored things and restored the potential for a future restoration, what does work look like now in a post-resurrection, post-ascension community of Jesus followers? I think that'd be a good podcast to do.
Thank you for listening to the Archippus Podcast.
If you enjoyed this podcast, we would appreciate it so much if you would share what you thought of it. Leave a review, leave a like, a 5-star rating. That so much helps us to promote this podcast, to share the word, and be an encouragement to others.
And if you want to support the project in other ways, you can check out our website, archippushouse.com. There we have several different resources that you can check out. And we even made some merch. We made some t-shirts and hats with our logo. Getting any of that helps financially support the project. And it's just a fun extra way to help share and invite others to check out the project.
And if you go to archivisthouse.com, there you can also sign up for our mailing list. And if you join our mailing list, we promise to send you multiple free copies of our books. So if you like free books and you like our books, join our mailing list and we will send you our books for free just for being a fan.
Thanks again for engaging with and supporting the project. And we hope to see you next time.